Welcome to The Cost of the Pipeline on PANJ Radio. And as you might have noticed, I am not Mike Spilley. Mike Spilley couldn't make it today, so I get to sit in on his place. My name is Patty Kronheim, and I'm the founder of Hopewell Township Citizens Against the Pennies Pipeline, and I'm the outreach coordinator for Rethink Energy NJ. So welcome, everyone. We also have some wonderful guests here today. To my right is Tom Gilbert, who is the campaign director for New Jersey Conservation Foundation, and my colleague, the campaign director for Rethink Energy New Jersey. Welcome, Tom.
Thanks, Patty. It's great to be here with you.
This is a lot of fun. We're going to have a good time today. And also, to my left is the beautiful and very talented Emma Bell. Many of you may know Emma from her starring role on The Walking Dead. And recently, she's had a directorial debut with her new thriller called Scratch, which is going to start to be seen at different film festivals. And she is also a daughter, I have to, for full disclosure, the daughter of Rob Bell, who's the program director here at PANJ and Green Birdie Productions. And recently, Emma has got a new role, being involved in helping produce and create a documentary on pipelines called Standing Ground. First off, welcome, Emma, and thanks so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. This is fun. It's my first time on my dad's station.
That's
weirdly.
That's great. We'll have to get Dad on mic maybe and weigh in, because I know he's really proud. So Emma, can you tell us a little bit about your project on pipelines and what it is you're doing?
Sure. It's myself and an amazing team of people, and we decided that, you know, in light of the North Dakota Access Pipeline and many other pipeline projects that are going across this country, we just had to kind of follow this story. I mean, I've been hearing about natural gas pipelines now for the better part of 10 years, I think, at least in my life. And I've never really understood why that's the direction we've chose to move. So when Dakota Access came about and my father, Rob, told me about what's going on here with PennEast, a couple friends of mine and I, we just decided we had to look into it. And since we're all in the entertainment business, we decided to bring along a camera. And that's kind of how we got into making a documentary about it. I mean, it just became such an interesting subject matter, and so many stories are out there that need to be told.
So are you telling multiple pipeline stories?
Yeah, we are. We're focusing on three major pipelines across America, on the micro level, and then, of course, the whole industry of fracking on the macro level. We're focusing on the PennEast pipeline here in New Jersey and PA, on the North Dakota Access Pipeline in North Dakota, and on a pipeline in Texas called the Trans-Pecos, all of which eminent domain is in play. Mm-hmm. And all of which have great opposition from communities in which they're trying to go through.
And different kinds of pipeline. You've got an oil pipeline out in North Dakota, right? And the Texas pipeline, what kind of pipeline is that?
That's a natural gas pipeline, mm-hmm. as well.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's the PennEast pipeline.
Yes.
Which we know, anyone listening to this station knows, is a natural gas pipeline. And I have to say, I really hate calling them natural gas. Can we start calling them dirty gas pipelines instead? So
I don't have a problem with that.
So what inspired you originally to really want to take this on? Because it's a big project. This sounds like a multi-month, you know, a lot of your time and energy.
Yeah, it is. But I think for me, about 10 years ago, I saw an incredible documentary called Gasland by Matt Fox. And due to a lot of exposure from that, and also the amazing work of organizations such as the New Jersey, I don't know if the New Jersey Conservation Foundation did this for New York, but things like this in New York, there was a moratorium placed on natural gas fracking in New York City or in New York State. And for me, 10 years ago, when I watched that documentary, I was shocked, because I had been told that natural gas was a cleaner energy, and right, the energy that we should be using to get off of fossil fuels, to get off of dirty gasoline.
Right, the old bridge argument.
Right, but you know, but 10 years ago, it was even like, wow, guys, we found an energy that we can use that's incredibly green. And I lived in New York City, and all these green buses that say natural gas is the energy of the future, and it's 100% clean burning. And I really rallied against it. I thought, okay, fantastic, let's do that. Let's move forward. And then I saw this documentary and realized that, you know, actually, it's not clean at all. And in fact, it's almost more detrimental when it comes to water sources, which really, really raised a lot of red flags for me, because, you know, our water in the world is not a renewable resource all the time. And in light of the fact that there's a lot of climate change, I live in California, we don't have any water.
Right.
So we have to ship our water from many, many states. And if that water gets contaminated by these fracking fluids, or if, you know, here in New Jersey, a lot of people's wells are proposed to be on the pipeline route. That's incredibly...
Absolutely. PennEast endangers a lot of wells. And I know on this program they've talked a lot about water risks and how PennEast could impact so much of the water in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're saying, you know, natural gas is not a clean fuel. It doesn't burn clean. It's a dirty fossil fuel. It produces a lot of carbon when it's burned. So it is a dirty fossil fuel. But as a native of New Jersey, what concerns you the most about the PennEast pipeline?
Well, I mean, this kind of goes along with the last question in a sense. I think another reason why I decided to do this documentary was because there's not a lot of knowledge about the effects of natural gas in the country. A lot of people, such as myself, 10 years ago, before I sort of started learning about it, still believe that natural gas is the right direction to be moving in. I mean, we really haven't even had any person in our political sphere talk about alternatives outside of natural gas, with the exception of, I think, Bernie Sanders. But, you know, Hillary, Obama, even them, they didn't have a very strong environmental stance in terms of our energy usage. And so one, I think that there's not a lot of information out there that's reaching far places. And I think that that gets very weighed down by the political sphere. So that does concern me both in New Jersey and in the country at large. But number two, in specifics to PennEast pipeline, for me as a person who grew up here, I was born and raised in Hunterdon. I lived on a very old road. We had tons of acres, beautiful land. This part of New Jersey is incredibly beautiful. And a lot of people don't understand that. It's incredibly historical and it's incredibly beautiful. And the PennEast pipeline, along with a lot of other pipelines, are threatening to destroy that. I mean, we've got amazing parks that they want to go through. We've got beautiful farmland that they want to go through. We've got beautiful mountains that they want to blast through the rock.
Right, Baldpate Mountain.
Baldpate Mountain being one of them. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the Sauerland.
The whole Sauerland area.
Yeah, yes. Whole Sauerland area. But I think also going underneath the Delaware and through, you know, at least, what is it, 30 C1 streams, which if people don't know what that means.
Yeah, it means the cleanest streams in the state, and where we a lot of our drinking water
comes from.
A lot of our drinking water.
So I think that concerns me the most, to be honest, the water, the water contamination.
Now I want to bring Tom in here. Tom, you had the opportunity to go out hiking recently on the New Jersey Conservation Foundation Jones Hike this past Sunday and walked part of the pipeline with Emma. And what areas did you take her through and show her?
Well, we had, it must have been over 100 people out to hike a portion of the proposed route in Delaware Township. And we were hiking along the Wiccatchiokee Creek, which is an absolutely beautiful and pristine stream. One of those C1 streams that are, you know, again, have the best water quality in the state. And people got to see firsthand this incredibly beautiful area that this pipeline would punch right through. A lot of the lands that we walked through are preserved lands, preserved farms. And people have been really shocked to learn that a property that they thought was preserved, you know, for future generations has no protection from a pipeline like this.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really eye-opening for people to see how beautiful this area is, to see the incredibly pristine stream. And it's just really appalling to think about a major industrial construction project mm-hmm. like this, punching through a beautiful and pristine area like this.
Yeah.
Right. And now you took your crew out and were able to meet some of these people out on this?
We did. We've met so many incredible people. I mean, that's been one of the greatest things to come out of this is just the warmth and the openness that comes with the people who are fighting this. And you know, they're not all liberal necessarily. I mean, we saw a lot of people who, you know, maybe even voted for Trump in this election. So I would like to take the conversation away from politics in a sense, and stop pitting the two parties against each other or your, you know, liberal versus conservative, because the reality is, you know, these pipelines and the energy crisis that we find ourselves in very often gets bogged down by party lines, but in reality it's harming and affecting everybody, no matter who you are. Right. But you know, yeah, everyone was fantastic. We talked to people who, a woman up in Pennsylvania actually, who her name is Albertine, and she has a third generation farm. It's been in her family for three generations. She's been living on it for two of those generations. She's 90 years old. This entire farm is her life. I mean, this is all she has in the world. She's been living there since she was born. It's kept her in the family. She never did anything outside of this farm, and she's proud of that fact. She loves her farm. Mm-hmm. This farm has wetlands on it. Her well is on it. The Pennies pipeline, you know, is proposed to go right through her well. And when she asked the pipeline company, can you just move it over? I'm not even saying take it off my land. If it's needed, I understand, but like, just move it over away from my well. And they said, no. We talked to, you know, people who have sacred Lenape, burial grounds on their land that this pipeline will be going through. And the Lenape were the Native Americans in this region, a very peaceful Native American tribe. And, you know, again, the pipeline companies are, and with Penn East, you know, especially, they're kind of just bulldozing through people's lands. They're with no regard for the history of that land or the respect of the people who live there.
Right. And if the federal agencies grant certificates for these projects, then they would be faced with eminent domain, so they wouldn't have a choice.
Correct.
Right, right, which Tom, you were going to say something.
Well, yeah, we also were able to hear from some of the affected homeowners on the hike on Sunday mm-hmm. who are faced with the prospect of the pipeline, you know, running right up their driveway, right through where their barn currently is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some really sad, scary stories of, you know, people like, you know, Joe and TC Buchanan, who were describing how their farm is their, you know, it's their life investment. And so this is their economic livelihood
exactly.
that's at stake here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, another homeowner who has gotten her farm certified recently as an organic farm. And there's, you know, real concern that the pipeline would, you know, jeopardize her organic farm. Mm-hmm. So, there's so many dimensions to this. It's not just mm-hmm. the environmental impacts, but, right. you know, again, the eminent domain and the taking of private property, which to your point, you know, Emma, I mean, that's not a liberal issue. I mean, that's, you know, that's a deeply held American value, I think, you know, red or blue.
Absolutely.
That resonates with everyone.
Yeah. I think it's hard to, you can't really overestimate the human impact that Penn East would have on the people in its path, and
agreed. I think that
and the communities, the larger communities mm-hmm. as well.
My team and I, we've been calling this a human rights issue because although it's not exactly in our Constitution federally that we have the right to clean air and clean water, how can you have all the other rights if you can't drink your water or breathe your air? Do you know what I mean? Like, these are people's lives that are being affected in a way that is irreparable. I mean, there's no real oversight. That's the thing that's kind of baffling to me is that it seems to me that like FERC and these other agencies that are kind of in charge of this, they're not really listening necessarily to the concerns of the communities to which these pipelines are going through.
Mm-hmm. No, it does seem to fall on deaf ears a lot. But I've also noticed, and I'm wondering if you noticed this when you were talking to people, that there is a lot of hope, and there certainly is a lot of spirit in these people who are fighting this. They know that agencies such as the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection has the ability to stop a pipeline by not issuing the water permits. We saw that with the Constitution Pipeline in New York. So the people on this line, they're all fighting. Nobody's giving up we've been able to proceed. And has that been your impression and your experience as well?
Yeah. I mean, I am a New Jersey resident, and I couldn't be more proud of being a New Jersey resident. Honestly, I mean, we get made fun of a lot at the world at large, I'm not going to lie, but the reality is there's a statement, don't mess with Texas. And I think really it should be, don't mess with New Jersey. This valley in particular and is a valley that fought many hard won battles. I mean, people don't recognize that this valley, this portion of New Jersey, especially, Hunterdon and Mercer counties, this is where Washington crossed in the Revolutionary War. This has one of the longest histories of standing up for individual rights against an oppressive government. And I'm not trying to say that I feel like this is an oppressive government, but I am trying to say that the energy companies right now are working in a way that is so, it's not taking into effect what the needs and desires of communities are. And especially in New Jersey and everyone we talk to in Pennsylvania, they're not going to let these companies come through their land. They're not going to sit and let this happen quietly. They're going to fight for what they truly believe is right. And I think that is the way that we make change. You know, it's our First Amendment, right? I think that is how you make change in this, obviously peacefully. I'm not promoting violence.
Of course,
just saying, but you know, these are our homes. These homes have been here since the birth of our nation. Especially in the PennEast pipeline situation, these farms and these homes and these waterways and these bridges that are all going to be affected negatively, they've been here since we were born. And I think that that's something that we really need to hold on to.
You just said that so beautifully, Emma. Thank you so much. And I just reiterate, you know, these towns from Holland Township all the way down through Hopewell Township in Mercer County, these are communities that have been fighting and will continue to fight this project, and they have spent millions of dollars preserving the land around them. And they didn't do it just to make it look pretty. They preserved this land in large part to protect the water supply. And, you know, when sometimes people consider this a NIMBY argument, and I just want to say that, you know, it's not. The water that these towns have and the tributaries, they feed into the Delaware Raritan Canal, and they provide water for 1.5 million people in the state of New Jersey. So this is an issue that impacts New Jerseyans all over the state as well.
And not to mention other states. I mean, the Delaware River, as I know it, yes, also feeds 18 million Americans downriver. So
absolutely.
And one of the major concerns with respect to water quality is the risk that construction of the pipeline could elevate arsenic levels. And arsenic levels are already high in this part of the state to begin with. And there's a professor at Princeton, T.C. Onstott, who's done some really compelling research that has been shared with all the relevant agencies, that his conclusions are that there is a very serious risk that this construction could cause major problems for drinking water, and not just people locally on wells, but the, you know, more than 1 million people who are drawing their water from the DNR system, since these creeks that PennEast would cross would flow into that system.
Great. You know, you had a chance to interview Tellis.
I did. Right? We did. We were honored to have him come. He took us to one of those C1 streams, and he kind of showed us exactly what he was talking about with the arsenic in the rock. I mean, but this is another example of a citizen on their own volition, taking matters into their own hands. I mean, he went out with a student of his, and they just started doing their own surveys, because the surveys that were coming back from the PennEast companies around the arsenic levels just didn't seem right to him. They were saying, oh, there's not that much arsenic in these rocks, and also the amount that would be leached into the water is really not a big deal. So don't worry about it. It's fine. We can still go through these streams. We can still blast through this rock. And Professor Onstott said, I don't know, let me go check by myself. And so he went and he took many, many samples on his own, and he found completely contradictory conclusions. And also what he said is, not only did they misrepresent the information of the levels of arsenic in the rock, but they also, in their experiments of the leaching of the levels of arsenic in the rock, only took a sample and had it leach for 18 hours.
Mm-hmm.
When in reality, around the creeks, the blasting in order to get down there would leach these rocks into each creek for 2 months.
Right. He also talks about how the actual operation of the pipeline can help activate the arsenic so that it actually goes into
Absolutely.
Wells and into the water. So he's an amazing resource. He's also one more example of someone with scientific background, and that actually is disputing much of what Penn East has put out on the agency dockets and in their studies. You've got the New Jersey DEP, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Department of the Interior, the EPA, all basically saying to Penn East, go back to the drawing board. We don't agree with your results. There'd be significant impacts. So, you know, and he's a wonderful example of a citizen volunteer with just an incredible knowledge. So I'm so glad you got him.
Yeah,
on your documentary. That's fabulous. That's fabulous. So definitely, I think that I'm really looking forward to seeing this when you're all done.
Me too. It's a big story because we're not just focusing on Penn East. We're also focusing on, as I mentioned, North Dakota and Trans-Pecos. And I think, you know, our ultimate goal is to connect these pipelines because they are connected. Just like the waterways in America are connected. There's a great graph right now out there on Facebook and other platforms where you can see they've highlighted all of the rivers in America. And it looks like looking at veins in a human body. I mean, it's so beautiful. And what you realize is that this country is covered in waterways, and these waterways are the life force of everything else that has to do with this country. And if we start polluting these places in various spots, I mean, it's going to all come back together. You look at the nuclear waste that came over in Japan. Well, now because of that, horrible
because of the accident. Yes.
They haven't been able to turn it off. In California, on the banks of California now, the shores of California, we're seeing fish who have very high levels. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the reality is water moves. It's connecting all of us, and we need it. We rely on it for everything.
Right, it's true. The nature doesn't know the boundaries. Water moves, air moves. We're all connected, and we're connected to the earth, obviously, as well. And we don't have alternatives for water, right?
That's what I'm saying.
We can see.
Yeah,
we have alternatives for energy, but we don't have any alternatives for water. That's for sure.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, what Penn East has said is, if it turns out that you know, we wind up increasing arsenic levels in people's drinking water, we'll just supply them with an alternate water source. So
I mean, what does that mean?
They're
going to pull a truck. We're
going to
pull a truck up, and we're all going to like show up with our little gallon jugs, and I mean,
yeah, or filters, right? Isn't that what they mentioned? Filters, but filters run out. Has anyone ever had a Brita filter? You have to replace that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I think they don't recognize or understand that we have many of our communities have what are called soul aquifer systems, and they're already with the changes that we're seeing in rainfall and climate changes that we're seeing and experiencing. We get these floods or droughts now instead of these nice steady rains that used to fill the aquifers. So we're having more drought conditions, and it's stressing our aquifers more. Many of the hydrologists in the area and the township hydrologists have said that. That's why two Board of Healths, the Delaware Township and the Hopewell Township Board of Health, passed resolutions saying the Penn East Pipeline was bad for the health of their communities. It wasn't just safety and health issues, it was the water. Speaking of safety and health, did people speak to you, Emma, about their concerns about the pipeline, their safety concerns about living so close? Because we know that the Penn East Pipeline would be the single highest pressure pipeline running through the state of New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Many people don't realize that. So what can you share with us about that?
Oh, yeah. That is a great point. The Penn East Pipeline is going to be the highest pressure pipeline. We've seen very recently how many leaks and explosions pipelines have natural gas.
It's about once a month we're averaging these days.
Yeah. And so if you take that and you multiply it by three, that's essentially the size of the Penn East Pipeline. We interviewed a lot of people whose properties, you know, weren't on the pipeline route in terms of the pipeline going through their property, but bordered right next to the pipeline. So we're talking
the abutters.
Yes.
All the risk, none of the rights is what they
exactly. So even in an eminent domain situation, those people wouldn't even get wouldn't even have their property paid to be taken away from them. They just have to live with this pipeline right next to them. And I was told that the blast zone for a leak or, you know, a potential explosion for the pipeline is within a half a mile, 30 seconds, 50% mortality. So if, right. if it's 100 feet from the edge of your property, I'm sorry to say, but if there's a blast, you're probably not going to survive that. And, no, and this thing is going through communities where there are elementary schools and, you know, retirement communities. I mean, it's all around horrible.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much sums it up. Yes, so Emma Bell, from The Walking Dead to Pipeline Walker. This is
oh, I like that. I'm going to use that.
We like that too, and we're glad you're here. We're going to take a break and a short break. You're listening to The Cost of the Pipeline Radio on PANJ Radio. In the second segment, we'll be talking more with Tom Gilbert about Rethink Energy New Jersey poll results that were just released yesterday, and be looking at the pipelines from a broad statewide perspective. So we'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Stephen Harris of Entrepreneur Espresso. Summer is over. Time to get back to business. Actually, here in the Delaware River towns, we are always open for business. Come join me as we discuss local business, business ideas, and trends, and get expert advice on Entrepreneur Espresso. Yes, we are back with a new format here on PANJ Radio, your local digital radio station. However, we need your support. Consider being a sponsor or an advertiser, which will help us to deliver the business news you can use, along with techniques and ideas you can use right now to help your business grow. We will discuss trends in social media, web marketing, traditional marketing, and other ways to tell your business story and attract and grow your customer base. And we are now on TuneIn Radio, a mobile app, which will give you a bigger reach in Lambertville, New Hope, the Delaware River towns, and the world. Join us live next week at 11 a.m. on Tuesday for Entrepreneur Espresso, only here on PANJ Radio. Visit us on Facebook or contact Stephen at 973-615-5287 or radio at ampyourvoice.com. Thank you.
Hey, I'm Deirdre Anderson with Delish Catering.
And I'm Laura Mangone from Chamberswap Cafe and Catering.
And we'd like you to join us on Food for Thought, where what do we talk about, Laura? We talk about restaurants. We talk about
pet
recipes.
Pet peeves.
Bitchy hostesses.
All sorts of food-related items.
All sorts of
food stuff.
And sometimes not so much food stuff. We go off on segues, but we have a lot of fun, don't we?
Absolutely.
So join us on Food for Thought.
PANJradio.com, 1 o'clock weekdays.
Hi, you're listening to Joey Novick, and I am the host of Punchlines in Politics. We air live every Monday, 7 p.m. right here on WPANJradio.com, and that show repeats at 6 each day. And we have some of the best people from politics and some of the most fantastically funny comedians in New Jersey. So please listen to me, come in the studio, and enjoy the show. Joey Novick, Punchlines in Politics.
Your business only gets one chance to make a first impression. That's why Green Birdie Productions offers free re-edits on every high-definition video we create. Our Emmy Award-winning staff and green screen special effects studio guarantee the quality we strive for. It's no wonder most of our business comes from referrals. Green Birdie Productions. Compelling video. Competitive price.
Hi, this is Bernie Wagenblast, and hopefully Vinny V is not stuck in traffic right now and will be able to do his show in the green room here on PANJradio.com. You'll find all sorts of interesting things that are going on in New Jersey and in Pennsylvania. So tune in to Vinny V and In the Green Room.
Welcome back to The Cost of the Pipeline on PANJ Radio. I am your guest host, Patty Kronheim from Rethink Energy NJ, filling in for the ever-informed Mike Spilly, who isn't able to be with us here today. And we're just back from our break, and we're going to be discussing some more with Emma Bell and Tom Gilbert. But right now, I want to turn this to Tom to talk about some very exciting poll results that Rethink Energy NJ released yesterday down at the State House in Trenton. And Tom, you want to tell us a little about that, please?
Well, sure. Yeah, it's very happy to be able to share these findings. This was a survey done by FDU Public Mind. So this is a very longstanding and reputable polling institution in New Jersey. And this was a poll of over 700 registered voters in New Jersey that was conducted in late September and early October. So these are very fresh results. And the survey got into a whole variety of energy issues and New Jersey voters' attitudes on those issues. And the headline, really, is that New Jerseyans overwhelmingly want clean energy. And it's support that, you know, cuts across, really, all political and demographic lines. You know, for example, over 87% believe that investing in renewable energy is somewhat or very important to the future health of the
state.
Wow, 87%.
87%. Now, how does that break down, Republican, Democrat? Is this a partisan issue, or is this?
Well, with numbers like that, no, it cuts across all those lines. I mean, that includes over 80% of Republicans and independents. So this is clearly not a partisan issue. New Jerseyans of all stripes want clean energy. Well, and
I got to tell you, if we did a poll that said, you know, how many people approve of puppies, we might not get numbers that high. I mean, this is just astounding to think that we're talking about almost 90% of the people in New Jersey want renewable energy, think it's important for the health of New Jersey. That's something that, you know, I think should definitely get the attention of policymakers here in the state.
well, we hope so. And actually, this was the second year in a row that FDU did this survey for us, and they found the same results last year. So this is not a flash in the pan. You know, this is real deep support. And, you know, the other key finding is that they want New Jersey to move much faster and set the goals much higher than we currently are. So, you know, some very specific goals. We found overwhelming support for having the state set a goal of reaching 80% renewable energy in the state by 2050, which would put New Jersey amongst the leaders. But, you know, there are other states that are already moving in that direction. And the danger is that, you know, those states are going to pass New Jersey by in developing, you know, the clean energy economy. And those states that do are going to take jobs and businesses with them. So this is not just an environmental issue. This is an economic issue as well. And we know from groups like the Union of Concerned Scientists that we can create three times as many jobs investing in renewable energy as investments in the old fossil fuels of yesterday.
All right. And yet we seem to be moving as a state in the direction of pipelines. So we know that, you know, in full disclosure, yes, Tom and I work together. So, you know, we know that in between the years 2013 and 2015, New Jersey's carbon emissions went up 27.6%. Now, that is almost 28% more carbon emissions in the state of New Jersey, and that is due primarily to the increase of gas-fired electrical generation plants. It's because of gas power plants. So with this going on, and knowing that we have to lower our emissions by about 23% in order to meet any kind of goals that would go with the Clean Power Plan, yet still, people, when you were polled, there was an interesting poll result that people in New Jersey said when they were asked about what they thought about natural gas. And where is there a little bit of a disconnect that we can clear up?
Well, it was encouraging in that most voters chose solar as the most important energy source for New Jersey's future, and people understand that solar and wind are clean. But to your point, they're a little bit confused on natural gas, and about 50% think it's clean and 50% think that it's not. And this is really the result of what has been a very concerted effort by the industry over many years, with millions of dollars behind it, to convince people that natural gas is clean. And we've talked right. about all the reasons why that's not the case. So there's we have a lot more work to do and education to help people really understand the downsides and how gas is moving us in the wrong direction. And in New Jersey, it is the reason why our emissions are going up now 2 years
it's
in a row.
It's a dirty fossil fuel.
Exactly.
It doesn't burn clean. It has tons of carbon are emitted when it's burned. Emma, you were saying how you know, traveling around the world and going everywhere, that you see that big multi-million dollar gas companies, advertising campaigns at mm-hmm. work by mm-hmm. calling it clean on the sides of buses and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that speaks to a couple of things. I think the good aspect of this is that I really believe in the good of human beings. And I think in large part, and those polls really speak to this, people want to do better. People want to live in a better world. People want to save the environment. But I think, yes, there is a lot of misinformation going on. And that is a product of lots of money being put into places to kind of deceive the market, to deceive consumers, you know, and play on the fact that that people have lives and people have a lot of things going on in their life, and they can't always be up to date on their own about what is best for the environment. And we rely very heavily on people who are experts and people who are governing us. And unfortunately, I think we see in the energy movement that those pockets are deep. And
yeah, they certainly
there's
are.
there's a very big connection that I think is sort of undeniable between the fracking industry and the oil industry and our politicians. And you know, because I don't understand, and I'm going to play a little bit of like just being a devil's advocate here, like why, if it were true that renewables will help save consumers money because it's a free source of energy, will help produce jobs, and is better for the environment, then why in the world do our decision makers, the people who are effectively in charge of us, why do they push that to the side? And why do they keep us moving towards an unsustainable future? You know, a lot of people ask me that. They say, well, there's got to be a reason why, right? I mean, there's got to be a good reason why for us.
Right. That's a really good point. And I think there's so much misinformation out there. Emma, I know, I think pipelines have brought this home in New Jersey a lot, because largely geographically where we are, we happen to be sometimes just in the way and the pipelines want to come through here. We certainly don't need more pipeline capacity in New Jersey. Rethink's done a lot of the research, and we know that that's just not true. But there are a lot of New Jerseyans who are now actually very concerned about pipelines. So I think we're building the only good bridge of the pipeline here is an education bridge, maybe, about how bad it is. But Tom, you want to say one of the poll results about what New Jerseyans think about pipelines now in New Jersey?
Sure. So not only do New Jerseyans overwhelmingly want clean energy, but they reject building more pipelines to the past. And some specific examples of that. So when given a choice of, do you think that pipelines are a threat to the state in a variety of ways, or do you think that they help the state, 2 out of 3 New Jersey voters think they are a threat. And over 70% of voters believe that it's more important for the state to invest in clean energy sources rather than in more fossil fuels through the construction of additional pipelines. So
that's,
it's pretty
that's
clear.
A really, now, that's the really good point, and I think we really, you know, can pursue some more here. Let's connect the dots. Let's talk about how pipeline construction, how investment in pipelines, how the building up of this fossil fuel infrastructure prevents us or harms us and makes it harder to go to renewables. You want to talk about that a little bit? Because I think that's a really important point. A lot of people, they don't like pipelines, and they want renewables. But let's see how these actually work together, because we've already said natural gas isn't a bridge; it's really a detour. It's actually worse than that. But so why don't you talk to that?
Well, the more we invest in fossil fuels and additional pipelines, the more it slows down the transition that we need to make to renewables. And that transition needs to happen.
It needs yesterday.
To happen exactly, yesterday. Right? Because
that's right, Emma.
We already know the course we're on in terms of climate change and in a lot of respects, the damage has already been done. And we have to reduce emissions rapidly, and the only way to do that, especially in New Jersey, where about 50% of the energy electricity generated is from natural gas, and only 3% from renewables in New Jersey.
Right, and I just want to give a picture for people who aren't aware of this. So 3% of our energy comes from renewables, approximately in New Jersey. Less than 2% comes from coal, and that's dropping. So we really don't have other fossil fuels to transition away from. Natural gas is the big fossil fuel, the big gorilla in the room. And then the rest of our energy comes from nuclear in the state. So if we want to transition and lower our carbon, the first and most important thing we need to do is take our foot off the gas and increase our energy efficiency and
exactly.
our renewables. Now, so we understand how that changes the emission picture and how pipelines are bad for our emission picture, because that means more pipelines, means more power plants, means more
right.
emissions. And more compressor stations in use, and that's we see that happening around the state as well.
Right.
We've got the PennEast Pipeline, Garden State Expansion Project, which is a new compressor station and an expanded compressor station that wants to go through. Southern Reliability Link wants to go through in the Pinelands, South Jersey Gas Pipelines, Northeast Supply Enhancement Project, and then the Pilgrim Pipeline, of course, which is oil. So we're being inundated by pipelines in the state, and this feels like, and correct me if I'm wrong, this feels like the last gasps of the fossil fuel industry trying to stop us. It feels more like competition than a bridge to me.
Yeah, but part of the problem is it's more than a gasp, because if these pipelines go through, they're designed to be in place for decades, right? So as far as your question about how this is going to impact the movement to renewables, you build these pipelines and they last for decades, and basically it locks the state in the wrong path, and it increases our commitment to essentially these dirty fossil fuels for decades to come.
Right. Now let's talk about, you said decades, and I know, Emma, you were mentioning jobs, talking about jobs before earlier when we were off the air, about how people really do care about their pocketbooks, and how this last election really showed that people were hurting and they do have financial concerns.
Mm.
Who pays for these pipelines that are meant to be, that would take, are designed to be for decades? Who gets burdened with this? How does this work?
Yeah, well, it's all of us, right? I mean, it's the consumers, it's the rate payers. And that's the other big problem with these is that, these pipelines have been shown to clearly be not needed. And this is not about public need. This is about greed. And this is about essentially the opportunity for these companies to make a killing and get in on this Marcellus shale boom, essentially.
Right, and it's not just Rethink Energy New Jersey saying this. Who else is saying this?
Exactly. Well, not once but twice now, the New Jersey Division of Rate Council, and this is the independent consumer utility watchdog that looks out for the best interest of the ratepayers, has said twice now, most recently yesterday, that there is no evidence of need for this pipeline. And that it's driven by the opportunity for these companies to make a guaranteed 14% rate of return,
wow.
which they said would be like winning the lottery.
Yeah, and which one? Who of us wouldn't want a 14% guaranteed rate of return for 15 years, right?
Exactly, and that it would be unfair to the ratepayers, because these companies have the ability to come back and build the cost into their rate base and make you and me pay for it.
Right. We actually talked to her as well. Stephanie
Wonderful.
Brand for our documentary, and she yeah, I mean, what's great is that this is a nonpartisan situation either, right? This is her job. Her job is to look at the numbers, look at what it's, and she's actually supposed to be, representative of the consumer, right? So she looks at these rates and she says, like, wait, hold on a minute. This doesn't seem very fair. And I think it's important to point out that, there's no other solar, any kind of municipality besides the gas, the natural frack industry that is getting this kind of rate of equity. 14% is incredibly high, which, you know, this is all new to me. I don't know things like this, financial things like this, but I was given a great lesson by Stephanie, and it is abnormally high when in the state of New Jersey, the normal rates are more like 8 to 9%. But still, that is a subsidy that FERC, could potentially pass for PennEast, and no other form of energy is getting subsidized that way. So,
yeah, that's really true. I mean, the Natural Gas Act was designed in the early part of the 20th century to give natural gas a leg up, and you know, when competing with oil and coal.
Right.
But, you know, now it's so inappropriate that it gets this kind of standing anymore, regulatory. I'm just looking at what some of the Rate Council, you know, has said. It's not needed. PennEast can't justify the project's cost savings. It won't increase supply diversity or supply flexibility in the Mid-Atlantic region. You know, anything they say about the polar vortex is completely unsupported and a big myth. That's a good one that they came up with.
Yeah, and the other thing that they've pointed out, and this is something that's really interesting with this whole project, is all of this self-dealing that's going on, right?
Yeah.
So what you essentially have is that the companies that are behind PennEast, that are the owners, are the same companies that are the customers.
Right.
And so the companies behind PennEast are PSE&G, they're New Jersey Resources, New Jersey Natural Gas, South Jersey Gas, Elizabethtown Gas, right? Mm-hmm. And their corporate affiliates are the owners of the company.
Right.
And what they've basically done is they've manufactured their own demand. They've gone to FERC and say, see, this pipeline's needed because we've got contracts. Well, the contracts are with their own affiliate companies.
Right. Right. And that way they can put the risk on the consumers,
right,
on their own ratepayers. And these are 15-year contracts. So this is 15 years that the ratepayers, us, basically, are on the hook to have to pay for this $1 billion
right
pipeline. So what happens now? Let's say we are in the middle of, and this is the good news, we are in the middle of a huge renewable energy and energy efficiency disruption curve. There is an increase in renewables going on around the country. It has far outdistanced natural gas in terms of new infrastructure and new electrical generation capacity in the last few years. The prices keep dropping. I mean, this is, it's like saying, if we had told people 10 years ago, you're not going to use your home phone anymore. You know, you're all going to have cell phones. We said, no, you're crazy. That's not true. And then it just happened like that overnight. This is what's happening in the energy industry. It is a huge new, truly clean energy revolution with renewables and energy efficiency. So the ratepayers, us, the consumers, we're on the hook for 15 years. And let's say now all of a sudden the grid becomes more and more decentralized. There's more solar. We finally get wind up and going in New Jersey. We have great potential there. And hopefully with the new administration that will happen. So now all of a sudden, you can't make money so much on these pipelines because there isn't the need as much for fossil fuels. We're stepping off. But are the consumers still on the hook to pay for it?
Absolutely. And it's not just the people who are in the locally impacted area of PennEast, but it's ratepayers throughout New Jersey. So people need to understand whether, you know, you live nearby to one of these pipelines or not, you're still going to pay for it. Right. And so what happens is all the rules of the game are set up to benefit these companies. And if they start losing money, they can go back to FERC and they can get approval to raise their rates. So this pipeline would simply shift the supply from existing pipelines to a new pipeline that these companies would own and would be very profitable for them.
Right.
But it's going to hurt. It's going to take demand away from other existing pipelines, and the ratepayers on those pipelines are going to pay the bill for it.
And I think you probably saw that, Emma, when you were, you know, walking the pipeline. Sorry, I keep thinking of you now as a zombie walking on the pipeline. but I know you're not. I know Emma's really, when she's not a zombie, she's really quite beautiful.
Very kind.
But when you're walking the pipeline and talking to people, I think that people understand, people of New Jersey understand that this pipeline isn't for the greater good. I think that makes it even harder to swallow.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing, especially with the Pennies Pipeline. And I'd be interested, and this is something we're interested in our documentary to kind of explore, is this question of need. Because I think everyone understands that, whether or not you particularly, singularly need something, if there's a community at large that needs something, I think we're all at heart able to kind of sacrifice a little bit for that. Mm-hmm. But if there's not a need, then the destruction environmentally, the potential health and public safety concerns that come with these kinds of projects, and then on top of that, the economic raise or hike of these pipelines, it doesn't make any sense to anybody. There is no need. No one is benefiting from this.
Right.
No consumer is benefiting from this. No person in New Jersey is benefiting from this. Who is benefiting from this, if you follow the line, are these companies. Mm-hmm. These companies get to produce and resell their gas to themselves and then ship it overseas should they want to do that, or ship it to other states should they want to do that. They're the only people who get any kind of gain from this are those people. And I don't know if, I think that people in New Jersey understand there's no real need. New Jersey already pays incredibly low prices for natural gas, one of the lowest prices in the whole country. But I also think there is not a lot of, there's not a lot of understanding of that last point, which is that really there's no need at all except for the pocketbooks of these people who run these companies.
Yes, and Tom, we think Energy New Jersey Conservation Foundation, Stony Brook Millstone Watershed, Pinelands Preservation Alliance, all the groups, we worked together with, did sponsor the studies from Skipping Stone, which is an energy analyst, and who came up with results very similar to what the Ratepayer Council said. And maybe you want to say some of the highlights of that study, because now it's not one group saying it. There's a lot of evidence that's mounted. It's pretty indisputable at this point.
Well, very similar conclusions that the Rate Council and their experts came to. But one thing that they pointed to, which we haven't highlighted, is that they showed, there are existing alternatives that would not have these impacts on the environment, that would not require taking private land through eminent domain, and that would not drive up costs for ratepayers. All the needs that they've identified can be met with existing pipelines and existing gas. And this is something FERC hasn't even looked at. This is the no action alternative, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this is something that various agencies and we have been pushing FERC to say, look, you have to look at this no action alternative, because this project is really not needed.
Yeah. Well, and I also think FERC and what's happening with the energy companies is politics as usual, which we have seen in this current election. The outcome of it was that, for good or bad, most people in this country are saying they want government to run differently.
Yeah.
All the other rhetoric aside, you can agree or disagree on that. Both Bernie Sanders and Trump, what they were saying was, we want government to be different. And I think FERC and these energy companies are a classic example of government staying the exact same way it is, which has become not a, it's stepped away from its democracy of being, civil servants to the population, and more almost corporate interests overriding, not almost, definitely corporate interests overriding the needs of the citizens. And so for all the people out there who are listening or whatever, this is why I keep saying this should not be a problem that gets bogged down by, are you a liberal, are you conservative? This is a human rights issue. And if you really do want change, if that's what you've said, if that's what you voted for last week, then you need to be up on these things. You need to be holding FERC and these companies, you need to be holding them to this and say to them, no, if there's no need for me as a consumer, there's no need for this country in our fight against, all of the pollution that's happening, then stop taking from us just so that you can make money.
That's such a great point, Emma. And I think it's government for the people. you know, yeah. of the people, by the people, yep. for the people. And, you know, getting that was the big one of the big messages in the last election was wanting to get special interests out of politics. And I think I'm going to give a shameless plug here for RethinkEnergyNJ.org for people who want to know more information about pipelines and energy infrastructure in New Jersey. Because I think, you know, we're a data-driven organization. We'd like to be a resource for all the other organizations that address these issues as well. But, you know, we begin, start, end with the facts, with mm-hmm. data. And that is something that everyone needs to avail themselves. I mean, you can't have good policy change and good policy without an informed electorate. And so that's really where it's our responsibility as citizens to all do our job to find out what the facts really are. I want to offer a quote here. It was from a letter by Congressman Frank Pallone, who's a ranking member of the Energy and Commerce Committee down in Washington. And he wrote this letter to the Board of Public Utilities in New Jersey in reference to a large, high-tension project that's a further hardening of sort of this fossil fuel infrastructure in the state. And he said that we needed to avoid a system that, in his quotes, locks in the market for older fossil fuel generation while crowding out cleaner and less expensive options for generating power and ensuring reliability. And he states some really really key points: improve technologies that in new ways of managing demand, storing power closer to consumption through use of batteries and other kinds of storage possibilities, and those technologies are growing all the time. Increasing distributed generations, so rooftop solar, wind, and more microgrids and lower voltage lines moving electricity locally. Because I want to make a point that, you know, people like to bring up Sandy and all these issues and talk about protecting our infrastructure. And there were no transmission lines that were ever damaged during Sandy. And it wasn't the high voltage tension lines that went down. It was all the small local distributed lines that had problems, and substations that were, you know, built below sea level. And so a lot of these projects that use these excuses, like the Southern Reliability Link, which is a New Jersey resource project, which is a PennEast partner, they use these catastrophic events that really altered and harmed a lot of people, these events as excuses for these pipelines. And that to me is just disgraceful, because more fossil fuel projects will do nothing but increase these horrible incidents, and they aren't the solution. So anybody can jump in. I've rambled a little bit because I'll get off my soapbox on this one.
I was going to say that exact thing. I mean, it's hilarious to me that group of people who are benefiting the fossil fuels would say that if only we had these fossil fuels more readily available, we would, in a time of environmental catastrophe, we'd be able to do something and clean up, when they're the industry that kind of makes that thing happen. Go ahead, Tom, you were going to add to that.
So
we have 1 minute. We have 1 minute.
Yeah. 1 minute warning.
Emma's dad is telling us we got to stop playing.
One thing I learned is you have to listen to my dad.
Got to listen to Emma's dad. Well, I just want to thank you, Emma, for coming on the show and for coming out from LA, and for working on these projects, and including PennEast in that.
Because of course. It's really important.
We're really honored that you did
that. I actually want to say one other thing, which is how can people make change? And I want to shout you guys out, because Rethink Energy New Jersey, you guys have this great thing online where you can aid people in becoming interveners in the terms of PennEast pipeline and all sorts of resources. So please go out and check them out.
Right. And definitely write your congressman, write your legislators, vote, and come to any events we have and go on our website. And Tom, I want to thank you for coming as well.
Thank you.
Today. And it's really been a pleasure filling in for Mike Spilley. This is a wonderful program he's created. He'll be back next week. And as always, if you have any questions or suggestions, email thecostofthepipeline@gmail.com or go to the website at thecostofthepipeline.com. And always keep tuning in to PANJ Radio. Thanks, and have a great day.
Thanks.